Confirmation. Okay. Our first order of business would be the confirmation of Dr. Anton Truer of the Minnesota State Arts Board. And I understand Susan Gentz is going to speak, or Sue Gentz.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sue Gentz. I am not Anton Troyer. I'm very sorry that he couldn't be here today.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much. Dr. Troyer is in Washington, D.C. today, and he's going to be there this week. And when this hearing was scheduled, he wasn't able to change his plans. So we gave you a copy of his curriculum vitae, which I think you will find rather impressive. He's a prolific scholar. Has done a tremendous amount of work in the areas of Ojibwe language and culture, and we're pleased to have him as an appointee to our board. I wanted to highlight just a few of his many qualifications very briefly. I know you have a big agenda today. This is actually a reappointment. Governor Dayton appointed Dr. Troyer to our board in June of 2011 and then reappointed him in February of 2013. Dr. Troyer has been teaching at Bemidji State University since 2000, but recently he was named the executive director of the American Indian Resource Center at Bemidji State. He's published 9 books. 2 of them have been recognized by the Library of Congress as the best read in Minnesota in the years that they were published. And if he were here, I know he would point out that he's particularly proud that one of those 2 books is written entirely in Ojibwe. And so you have to speak the language in order to read that book. He edits the world's only academic journal of the Ojibwe language. Some of you, I hope, have had a chance to see a little of him and his work. He was featured in a documentary called First Speakers, Restoring the Ojibwe Language, that was produced by Twin Cities Public Television. It was just on again this last weekend, and I had a chance to see it again. That program also won a regional Emmy Award. Anton Troyer has championed Minnesota's traditional indigenous art forms and has worked tirelessly to expand the definition of art. His dedication to preserve, revitalize, and educate others in Ojibwe language, culture, and artistic heritage have earned him over 40 prestigious awards and fellowships, including from organizations such as the MacArthur Foundation, the Guggenheim Foundation, and the Bush Foundation. He's a native of the Leech Lake Reservation in Minnesota, has a BA from Princeton and an MA and a PhD from the University of Minnesota. And he gave me 2 sentences to read. He said, "I'm honored to serve the citizens of Minnesota as a member of the Minnesota State Arts Board. The arts embrace people of every culture, gender, and nationality and offer a great tool available to unite us, not in a struggle, but in appreciation for the beauty of the natural world and the human experience. Dr. Troyer is a great asset to the state and to the country. We're thrilled that he's a member of our board, and we hope that you and the full Senate will approve his reappointment."
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gentz. Are there any questions for Ms. Gentz? For the record, I want to announce that we do have a quorum. I forgot to say that. And so who wants to do this? Senator Johnson moves that the Committee on State and Local Government recommend that the Senate confirm the appointment of Dr. Anton Truer as board member of the Minnesota State Arts Board. And we'll send this to the floor. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
I'm sorry. All those opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Our next bill is Senate File 1191, and Senator Pappas will walk us through it.
Madam Chair and members, you should have in your packet a letter from Mr. Martin, the Executive Director of the Pension Commission, that says that this is the language that was reviewed and approved by the Pension Commission. And the procedure is that this language then is amended onto Senate File 1191. So my first motion is an author's motion to amend on that language. It's the 5A amendment.
All those in favor of Senator Pappas's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And it passes.
Okay, then second, I've been asked to read this into the record. PERA and MSRS have submitted documentation to be entered into the record of the Senate State and Local Government Committee. The documentation provides background on the projected funding needs of the PERA Police and Fire Plan, the MSRS State Troopers Retirement Plan, and the Judges Retirement Plan, and explains the shared approach of addressing the funding needs of these plans by including increased revenue through contribution increases and benefit modifications that will affect current and future active members and benefit recipients. Right? Next, then, I'm just going to summarize the bill. There are basically seven provisions in the bill. Article 1 is what is called the State Patrol Financial Solvency Measures. And this article, again, the whole idea here is for us to stabilize the funding, and we're asking for additional contributions from the employers and the employees, and in some cases for additional support from the state. So the State Patrol, this article increases member contributions by 2% of pay in two installments. It increases employer contributions by 3% in two installments. It increases the allowable service required for vesting for a retirement annuity to 10 years. Imposes a maximum retirement annuity set at 33 years of service credit. Increases the early pre-age 55 retirement reduction to be imposed, and reduces the post-retirement adjustment, the COLA, for current retirees from 1.5% to 1% until the fund becomes 85% funded. Then Article 2 is the definition of covered salary for PERA retirement plans. This article augments and revises the definition of covered salary, adding to the definition some performance or merit pay amounts, modifying credit for some supplemental retirement plan contributions, and excluding lump sum personal leave payments, retirement incentive payments, expense allowance, and per diem payments. Those are not to be included as part of salary for purposes of pension, and various kinds of employer-paid fringe benefits. Article 3 is the Police and Fire Financial Solvency Measures. This article tightens the duty disability definition, increases the allowable service required for vesting for a retirement annuity to 10 years for pre-July 1st, 2014 hirees, and to proportional vesting between 5 years and 20 years of service for post-June 30th, 2014 hirees, increases member contributions by 1.2% in two installments, increases employer contributions by 1.8% in two installments, imposes a maximum retirement annuity set at 33 years of service credit, increases the early retirement reduction to be imposed, refines the trigger for increasing the annual post-retirement adjustment rate above the current rate of 1%, that's the COLA, and extends the annuity receipt duration requirement for post-retirement adjustment eligibility from 1 year to 3 years. Article 4 is for TRA, the Teachers Retirement Association, and their early retirement reduction factor modification. We came up because of new mortality tables. There are new factors involved for retirement, and it was, in terms of what people had planned for retirement, it imposed too great a penalty, so this eases it in. So it replaces the TRA requirement of an actuarial equivalent early pre-65 or 66 retirement reduction for a level benefit tier retirement annuities with a less drastic set of reduction factors. Article 5 is the Duluth Teacher and St. Paul Teachers Retirement Plan benefit increases and their financial solvency measures. The article increases the formula percentage retirement annuity rates to the TRA rates for both Duluth and St. Paul Retirement Association. It establishes post-retirement adjustments for current retirees at 1% for Duluth, increases annual direct state aid by $6.4 million for Duluth and $7 million for St. Paul Teachers Retirement, increases member contributions by 1% of covered pay in two installments for both Duluth and St. Paul, increases the employer contributions in two installments by 0.71% for Duluth and by 1% for St. Paul. Forfeits rather than defers annuity reductions imposed on re-employed annuitants exceeding the earning limitations for both Duluth and St. Paul, requires a minimum service separation period for retirement annuity receipt of 90 days for St. Paul, and requires employer and additional employer contributions for re-employed annuitants for St. Paul. Article 6 is the judge's retirement plan financial solvency. This article increases member contributions for current judges by 1% of covered pay if judges receive a salary increase this biennium. So it is tied to their salary increase, which is in the will be in the omnibus judiciary bill. It increases the employer contribution rate with respect to all judges by 2% of covered pay, creates a downsized retirement benefits second tier for all newly appointed or elected judges and for any current short-term judges who elect the benefit tier coverage, reduces post-retirement adjustments for current retired judges from 2% to 1.75% until the retirement fund becomes 70% funded. That's their COLA. The employer contribution increase would have an $811,000 annual impact on the state court budget. The new second-tier benefit plan would have a 2.5% of final average salary formula percentage rather than the 3.2% and would have an age 66 normal retirement age rather than the 65 normal retirement age. So for this second tier for judges, we are reducing their benefits. They would have no retirement annuity service credit maximum instead of a 24-year maximum and would have a 7% of covered salary member contribution instead of a 9% of covered salary member contribution. Because they're getting less benefits, they're also paying less. Article 7 is the miscellaneous article, and this makes retiree union dues deductions from retirement annuities mandatory for MSRS and PERA. It increases their frequency to monthly deductions, allows deducted dues to be used politically for political purposes, and permits labor organizations and retiree associations to have MSRS or PERA make blind mailings on their behalf twice annually. And I just wanted to add that that is voluntary on the part of retirees if they want to join, remain members of the union. So, Madam Chair and members, I really wanted to do a Pension 101 in this committee, and we just didn't. We just ran out of time to do that. We should have done it really early on in session, and I apologize for not doing that because I think it would have been more helpful for members. But if you do have any specific questions, we do have two other members who are on the Pension Commission, three other members. I'm sure they could answer your questions, or more likely Mr. Martin. And but all of the FEN directors are here if you have any questions for the Public Employees Retirement Association, the Minnesota State Retirement, the Teachers Retirement Association, also Duluth and St. Paul, and someone representing the judges is also here, I believe, in the audience.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Mr. Martin, did you have something to add?
Madam Chair, no, I'm here to answer questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions of...
Mr. Martin would have taken a much longer time to explain the bill if I'd let him.
Members have any questions? It's a lot of bills.
Madam Chair, thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Pappas or to the Mr. Martin, some of these changes in the retirement here seems like they will push this out to meaning that we'll have some irregularities further on down the road because of the changes, the financial back and forth, and maybe I'm wrong in that, but I'd like to know if that's the case or if I'm reading the bill wrong.
Senator Anderson, could you be more specific unless Mr. Martin understands the question more than
well,
I
Madam do. Chair, Senator Pappas, just some of the changes from bringing on the trying to fix the situation with the St. Paul and also the Duluth retirements. It seems like we're only going to bring them up to a certain level, and they'll still be not fully complete or funded.
Fully
and so
done.
We're still going to be in the same situation 2 years, 3 years, 4 years from now. And am I wrong in that? And are we going to be looking at having to do this all over again?
Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, these funds have alternately done, they have done well in terms of the stock market. They've done almost as well, if not better, almost as well as the State Board of Investment has done, you know, around the 8%, 8.5% over the last 30 years. There have survived for 100 years. I think you'll lose it over 100 years old. There are some demographic issues that are on the horizon for Duluth and to a lesser extent for St. Paul. I have asked them to look at the feasibility of a merger into TRA, and they've agreed to do that. We weren't quite ready to push that on them because it's very expensive. They need to come into the fund to TRA, you know, more fully funded, if not fully funded. And it was very expensive for TRA to take over the Minneapolis teachers. And so I would like them to bring up their funding numbers if we have a few better years for the stock market so they become better funded. It's going to be less costly than to bring them into TRA for the state. Right now, if we were to merge Duluth, we're asking for $6.4 million a year. It would be $15 to $17 million a year. And if we were to merge in St. Paul, we're asking for $7 million, and it would be $30 million. To merge them. And so that's very costly for the state to do that. So I think we need to monitor these funds, and we are asking for a greater employer contribution and employee contribution to help shore up the funds, and we're asking the state to also help, so it's kind of a shared pain situation.
So, Madam Chair,
Senator
Pappas, with the economy the way it is right now, we're taking on trying to make these a little bit better funds. Why can't we wait till the economy comes back and then look at trying to make these funds whole or better than what they are right now?
Senator Pappas.
Because we're not doing that for anybody else, I hear out there. That the people out there, I mean, I've lost in my own retirement funds because of the economy and the stock market. My funds have cut in half, and now we are, as a state, are going to make these people whole, and it's a special group rather than what about the rest of the people in the state of Minnesota?
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Anderson. Well, we did freeze COLAs for a number of years so that we have a principle in our pension commission to try to keep the retirees whole. And it has been irrespective of the stock market because it's like it is a contract or a promise that we've made to state employees. And if we are on thin ice, if we alter the benefits too extremely because this is what has been promised them for 20, 30, 40 years, probably not 40 years, but 30 years, and to alter the benefits drastically, going back on that contract would, put us at risk of being sued, for example. And that's happened in other states, and the retiree has won in the lawsuit, and the state's been forced to pay the pension fund, the pension that they promised. So, but yet I think they're reasonable people and realize that if the pension fund fails, that, everybody is going to be in trouble. So that's why we came up with this shared pain approach where the employers are paying more, the employees are paying more, the retirees are getting less, and the state's being asked to kick in a small amount of money.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pappas. And a lot of what you said there makes sense, and certainly we don't want to go back on commitments that we've made to public employees, and I don't think anybody would advocate for that, but it seems like what we're doing here is we're increasing the cash available to these funds by way of state aid, which makes sense to bring up the percent funded, but then we're also increasing the benefits, thereby somewhat not totally offsetting, but increasing the cost of each person who is a pension recipient. So wouldn't it make sense to either not do one or do the other, but not do both at the same time if the issue is solvency? And that goes beyond just fulfilling the contractual obligation. Mm-hmm. We're now extending even better benefits to people in a situation where solvency is an issue.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, and they are paying for the improvement in benefits through the additional employer and employee contribution, plus they are contributing to the lack of solvency of the fund as well with that. So it is pretty hard to ask people to pay more for their pension if they're not going to get a little bit of improvement in their pension.
Senator Peters.
You can, I'll pass.
If it's your wife, call her back right away.
It is. For the record, it is my wife.
They're the most important person in your life. Any other questions then?
Any questions or comments?
I don't know if there's anyone in the audience. You know, we meet for 2 or 3 hours a week for almost the entire session, the Pension Commission. So we have had a lot of discussion, a lot of testimony on this. Okay.
Mary? Please state your name for the record.
I'm Mary O'Connor from Brooklyn Center. I worked for the University of Minnesota for 38 years. I paid about 4% of my salary into the Minnesota State Retirement System. The university paid about the same. I also paid 6.2% of my salary into Social Security, and the university paid the same. Now I am retired. I get $1,903 per month from Minnesota State Retirement System. I get $1,187 a month from Social Security. So even though I paid less to MSRS, I get much more in retirement benefits than I get from Social Security. It's time for us pensioners to be accountable. Minnesota State Retirement System is not fully funded. We pensioners should not get a yearly increase until Minnesota State Retirement System is fully funded. The taxpayers should not have to pay any more to secure our pension fund. Thank you.
And what was your name?
Mary O'Connor.
Madam Chair and Ms. O'Connor, I really applaud your willingness to sacrifice your COLA. I mean, I think that that is something that we might be having to ask retirees to do.
I think you should do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Connor. Anyone else wish to testify from the audience? Or?
And Madam Chair and members, I just want to let you know that the Pension Commission is going to be looking at a lot of things over the interim. We'll be looking at the impact of COLAs. We'll be looking at potential mergers of Duluth and St. Paul. Some members of the Pension Commissions have asked us to look at hybrid models of defined contribution models. I've asked members to kind of share with me what they think we should be looking at over the interim. We meet about monthly, and we take this responsibility very seriously. And we'll also be looking at interest rate assumptions, which right now is at 8%, and some people think that might be too high. And so we'll be taking a look at that as well. So,
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pappas, just going back to one of the comments you made about the amount of state aid that would be required to get the two funds into TRA. And what were those amounts again, just real quick?
For Duluth, I think it's $15 million a year, and for St. Paul, $30 million a year. And correct me if I'm wrong, anybody in the audience. And I think that will be less if we change the benefit structure closer to TRA, and also it could be less if the funds become better funded. So I think we're expecting a really good year this year from the stock market. Everyone is telling me that. Fingers crossed. Mr. Rice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian Rice, and representing St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. To Senator Peterson's question, just to clarify, the bill does contain an increase in contribution phased in. There are already contribution increases going on with St. Paul Teachers from a funding bill that happened a couple years ago. This bill would call for another 1% increase to raise their contribution rate to 7.5% of salary. In addition, they make a Social Security contribution. That contribution increase by St. Paul Teachers will then be the same as that currently paid by all the other school districts in the state. Same will happen with Duluth, and they will get the same formula. that the other teachers have had. About 5 years ago, the legislature approved a contribution increase for those plans and brought the multiplier up to 1.9%. So what's happening in this bill is to basically put the contributions and benefit accrual rates to be the same throughout the state, and that's an issue that St. Paul teachers have been working on, you know, for the last 5 years. So we really view that as an equity issue. And additionally, this pension commission has a policy that the employee should pay half and the employer should pay half of the cost of a pension, the normal cost of the pension. The normal cost of a teacher's pension for both St. Paul and Duluth and TRA is approximately 8.5%. So the active teachers now are paying almost 90% of the cost of that pension. And in effect, because of that higher contribution rate, the active teachers are really helping fund these plans beyond what was ever anticipated.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Senator Peterson.
Chair. Senator Pappas. So just so I can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel here, assuming all of the benefits just stayed the same and the demographics are going to continue to shift in a fairly predictable way, I would imagine, is what you're hoping for just a great year in the market? I mean, the market is at a, correct me if I'm wrong, an all-time high right now. Are we just hoping that we just kind of grow our way out of the solvency issue, assuming benefits just stay the same as defined in the bill that you have here? Is that the plan?
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair and Senator Peterson, I think that if we need to be moving toward merger, it's going to be easier if the plans are more solvent, so and less costly to the state. So that would be what I'd be watching for, is to do that during the years when we're actually, it's counterintuitive. You know, when everybody's doing well, nobody wants to make changes. They want benefit increases. But instead of doing that, look at a potential of a merger, if that's going to be the best thing to do, you know, long term.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pappas. And my questions really are just to get information. You have a lot of experience on the commission, and so in lieu of the informational hearing that we didn't have on pensions, I'm just trying to get an understanding of kind of where we're going from here on out. But if you're saying that state aid in the short term is going to increase the funded percentage of the funds, and that'll make them easier to get into the fund when you do a merger, which will be more expensive. Isn't it kind of six of this, half a dozen of the other? If you're using state money now to make it easier to buy down with state money later, isn't it all just state money? It's just a difference of whether it's tomorrow or whether it's years down the road.
Senator Pappas.
I'll let Mr. Rice.
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Rice?
If I could take a shot at that. Senator Peterson, if the bill passed and the assumptions that the actuaries have done with the plan regarding payroll growth, plan demographics, mortality assumptions, and the big one is the interest rate assumption. If all of those hold true and this bill passes, looking forward 30 years, the bill you have before you should be adequate to get this plan funded in 25 years, if you think about it as a mortgage. Given the best information we have today, looking at the plan demographics, the funding assumptions, and other things, if this bill passes, both Duluth and St. Paul would be on a trajectory to get 100% funded in 25 years. Events could intervene if people started living longer or if interest earnings were not made up. I would say in the case of St. Paul, this has been a very long road to get to this table at this point. It was 6 years ago the St. Paul Teachers Pension Fund came before the commission and said, we need help. The plan was started in 1909. In 1957, it was only 9% funded because in the wisdom of the legislature, it was easy to make promises, you know, a century ago, and nobody set the money aside. People didn't live as long. All the people worked longer or worked as long, but they didn't live as long. In 1970 and in 1957, when this plan was 9% funded, the state teachers plan was about 50% funded. In 1970, this plan, St. Paul Teachers, was about 20% funded, and the statewide plans were about 60% funded. At the very height of this plan, it reached about 80% funding. St. Paul Teachers has outperformed, according to the state auditor, the State Board of Investment, which has a spectacular record in terms of investment returns. But the simple fact is that really, if at real no time in the history of this plan has it been consistently the funds been set aside that were needed to fund its obligations. With the market downturns of the last decade, that made the problem more difficult. But now, if it would be the first time, really, I've worked for the plan for 20 years now, would be the first time that the dollars that were needed today to be set aside would be set aside to get this plan up and running. I'd submit that really this has been the little engine that could. I mean, the plan probably should have failed years ago, given it was 9% funded and 20% funded and barely on track. But I think with working with the legislature over the years, the legislature did provide some additional funds in 1994 that certainly helped it along. It's been a longstanding request before the Pension Commission, as I said, for 6 years. But quite frankly, given the other budget issues that the state has faced, the other pension issues that have intervened, this is really as good an opportunity as we have to come forward to ask for funds. And we know all of you are pressed on other issues around this legislature in terms of weighing revenues and expenditures. But the course could be to reject the bill, not fund these plans, and simply let the plans limp along until there was an absolute crisis like there's been in some other cases with MRF and Minneapolis Teachers, where they called it the death spiral and the funding ratio had dropped below 50%, and then the cost of fixing it, as Senator Pappas said, if you have to do a merger is basically, I think Senator Pappas's numbers were substantially accurate, basically a merger is about three times as expensive as trying to set the money aside now and get these plans on track. I would say, just in closing, Senator Peterson, these plans require constant monitoring. It's not like we show up 1 year and we'll see you in 15 years, or it's almost 19 years since we had the last general fund increase from the state. The Pension Commission does work very diligently. The members on that review these plans annually and ask questions, and there's been many appropriate questions asked, particularly is consolidation an option? How much would it cost? It's one that does require a lot of attention, and quite frankly, it's the legislature and this Pension Commission, Mr. Martin, Senator Pappas, that has that responsibility. The executive branch does play a role in it, but the oversight of this is primarily done by members of the legislature from that joint commission. They're the ones who are the experts and set the policy. And I would say, too, that pensions is a very integral part of compensation of your employees, whether you're private sector or public sector. It's part of the benefit package. And for many of these plans, it's not only their pension, but it also includes a disability feature. If you're disabled as a teacher, that the pension plan covers disability, and it also covers surviving spouses. So it's an important component of the employee's overall compensation, but it's really set by the legislature. It's not bargained for. It's determined by law.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if the choice is, you know, and again, I'm not necessarily advocating or saying that the state aid isn't necessary, but you laid out a kind of the two options. You said we can either fund it or we cannot fund it and potentially go into a death spiral and end up just like these other funds. Of course, if the choice A is funded and B is death spiral, you know, most people will take A. But if that's the choice and it's that dire, then why? Okay, assuming I agree with the increase in state aid, why would you, if the choice is that clear, why would you then do at the very same time increase the liabilities by increasing some of these benefits, getting rid of the low fund provision in the Duluth Fund in particular. Why wouldn't we at least take a short time, give it the aid that it needs, rather than increasing liabilities simultaneously? Aside from the fact that other people get these benefits, that doesn't really address the funding situation in the funds itself.
Mr. Rice, Senator Pappas?
Well, I would say, and Mr. Rice can augment what I'm going to say, is there's kind of two rationales. One is the equity argument, is that Duluth and St. Paul teachers have not been getting the same level of benefits that TRA has gotten. The other argument would be that we are increasing, they are paying more, and the teachers feel like, well, if we're going to be paying more, why shouldn't we get the same level of benefits then? If we're going to be paying what TRA members are paying, why shouldn't we get the same level of benefits that TRA members are getting? And we're not even doing that with retirees. We still have a difference between TRA and these funds with retirees. So equity, kind of fairness and trying to smooth out the difference between the funds and having more greater employer and employee contributions is part of that is going toward the solvency of the funds as well as the state aid.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Pappas. But isn't it, I certainly understand the idea of quote-unquote equity and fairness, but that's really not a principle of fiscal management. If the problem is that the funds don't have, aren't funded enough and are, on the brink of a death spiral, then why would you simultaneously increase liabilities while increasing state aid? Outside of equity and fairness, you can't write that on a check and cash it at the bank. Outside of those, what kind of principles of fiscal management how does that make sense from a fiscal standpoint to increase liabilities when you're already at a crisis point that's been identified?
Mr. Rice?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, I think that as to that issue, St. Paul teachers are paying 6.5% for a pension that's less generous than TRA's in terms of its formula multiplier and its retirement COLA. The bill asks St. Paul teachers to pay the same as other teachers throughout the state, although these teachers live everyone, but your school districts, to get the same formula but a lower COLA. So in a very real sense, the teachers, the active teachers in this case, are paying for that benefit, 100% of it. You could remove that part, and you would still be neutral on the fiscal issue. Because it wouldn't be fair to tell these teachers to pay the same as another group of teachers and get less of a benefit. Again, that goes back to you setting policy for what pensions should look like. And the state ultimately is the decider of that. And so there's an equity issue, but there's also the active teachers are paying for that equity on their own. And I would say St. Paul School District is the largest school district in the state. I believe it has the most number of students. 39,000 students are taught by those teachers. To allow, and it's already happened for 5 years, but if you were to simply continue that pattern, I think the fear it would be reasonable on the St. Paul School District as well as Duluth that some teachers may decide, especially if you're going to make them pay the same, why am I doing this? Is that good pension policy?
Why am I working for St. Paul?
Yeah.
It's also a recruiting issue for the school district if they're not offering comparable benefits to other school districts.
And as to the fiscal issue, we believe that the bill, the cost of the formula improvement is 0.85%, and the teachers are paying 1%. So in a way, and again, I go back to the point, the active teachers are already making a bigger contribution relative to what the policy of the state has been to get this benefit. And they're accepting a lesser COLA than TRA's. And that's
and the St. Paul School District is paying more than the TRA school districts are because there's a surcharge. So the St. Paul School Districts are actually paying, I think, 10.34% of payroll.
About 3% more than school districts throughout the state. So the school district in St. Paul is contributing probably $8 to $9 million more than they would be if they were not St. Paul. So the St. Paul taxpayers are putting skin in the game, if you will, above and beyond any other school districts in the state.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pappas, Mr. Rice. It seems like the only real basis for doing what we're doing here is because you keep going back to the TRA example, and this is what St. Paul members and Duluth members are paying for, yet they're not getting treated the same in some manner as other retirees in the TRA system, which, of course, is problematic because TRA is a different fund than St. Paul and Duluth. So if the issue really is that we just want everybody to be treated exactly the same, then the solution would be a merger of funds, not continuing to fund these things individually. I mean, which is kind of the way that you started out in saying it. So,
and Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, we have asked the funds to take a serious look at that, and we will be taking a serious look at that in the Pension Commission. It's just there is a fiscal reality that where we are helping these funds. If you take a picture of where they are right now and where we can project, as Mr. Rice said, they would be fully funded in 25 years. If we propose a merger, the dynamic is they have to come into TRA already fully funded. And so that requires a larger state contribution for how many years?
For 25 years.
25 years as well.
The bill would ask for, instead of $13 million to get these plans on track, Madam Chair, would ask for $40 million to do the complete equity, go to TRA, and have that. And one of the issues you would hear, Senator, from other of these mergers is, if you just did the merger, all of your teachers in your districts or school districts would raise the question, are we subsidizing from the plan this consolidation? Those issues always come up, and then you'll hear from your teachers or school districts, we're bailing, you know, St. Paul or Duluth out. This bill is
not. TRA teachers already think that they're doing that for Minneapolis, and it's not the case because the state is paying $22 million a year to TRA to cover the unfunded liability from the Minneapolis teachers. But that impression is out there, and so there is a concern that if we rush into this and we're not careful about doing it, that impression will be there as well for St. Paul and Duluth.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pappas, I agree that perception may be there, and the fact is there might be a lot of people who think that will be perceived right now, but instead of it being TRA, it'll just be the taxpayers at large in the state of Minnesota. So you're just drawing from a larger pool, but the concept is really exactly the same. So why should we be concerned about that principle when it applies to TRA, but not concerned about that principle when it applies to the taxpayers at large?
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair and Senator Peterson, I mean, you bring up a good point. I think the taxpayers at large have a broader responsibility to fund the schools. And part of funding the schools is paying the teachers. And part of attracting good teachers to work for the school districts are the compensation plan. And part of the compensation plan is the pensions. So you really come down to, if you want to have strong schools with good teachers, you have to have a decent compensation plan.
Mr. Rice?
Well, and Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, to your point, that's why I went through the history of this. No pensions in the state basically have been or can be granted unless there's approval by the legislature. And that's why I went through this funding history, why this plan had been underfunded for any number of years. Ultimately, the legislature never made the decision to get this plan to a 100% of normal and amortized costs. This is the first time, if you pass this, that this plan will have essentially had that course. And we could all sit around and point fingers and who did what. But for a very long time, there was a period in 1978 when the legislature closed this plan to new members. They had been not outside of Social Security. They coordinated with them. The state at that time when they closed that promised to the money but never delivered. The contribution numbers the legislature set for the schools and through its state aid formulas were never adequate. And as I said, this was the little engine that could. It succeeded despite all the odds, where the legislature just looked at it, and it was kind of easy, I would say, to kick the can down the road. The fund did well enough so it wasn't critical or dire. It didn't enter a death spiral, but it was never so great as to be able to hand out additional benefits, or unlike a lot of the other plans that got to 100% funded when the stock market was way up, this plan's highest funding level was 80%. Some of the other plans were higher than that. And so we're not here to blame the legislature or predecessors, but it's just gotten to the point where someone needs to, you know, come up to the table and say, can we put a plan in place that's going to adequately fund these so that there is not a catastrophe in 5 years that will be coming in, and then everybody will say, what happened? We didn't know about this. Well, we believe we've done our job in trying to present it to the legislature and introduce bills. And one point I would say is there has been a lot of talk about pensions. It's a much more public issue. But if there was one fact I could impart to legislators, it's this. You take all state and local government spending in Minnesota, and 1.6% of all that state and local government spending goes to pensions. The national average is 2.9%, substantially more, almost twice as much. And the states that face severe crises that we've seen, California, Illinois, or New Jersey, their pension contributions are approaching 5 or 6% of entire state spending. And at that point, I'd submit that clearly you as legislators, many of you sit on finance committees, that starts eating away at the very core of, you know, the function that government provides, where you then have to weigh education or public safety or judiciary, all these other factors. And I think that, the dollars that have gone into the pension system from the state as these additional aids have been valuable. And there's a history of that. The state did it with the local police and fire funds when they had situations and were closed. They supported MRF when it was closed. They've done it on other plans to find a way to make these systems right and to make them stable so that pensions do not become a huge burden on the legislative budgets and other matters. But the one thing from looking at this for 30 years, 1.6% of all state and local government spending is on pensions and retirement. And even Governor Pawlenty signed a historic bill in 2010 to reduce pension liabilities by $6 billion. The employees came forward and cut COLAs. Contributions were increased. And Tom Hanson, who many of you know was the Commissioner of Finance at the time, when they went to go to Wall Street to rate the bonds, Minnesota is in the top four or five states in terms of how it manages its pension debt. And it was a very positive in terms of the disclosures that are made to the bond market, and those disclosures are going to become more prominent. And quite frankly, from the City of St. Paul's perspective, I don't represent them, but new rules are coming online where you have to show what your pension obligation is. I told Mayor Coleman it was like having a credit card that he didn't know about. It's going to show up, but if there's a plan in place to pay it, the rating agencies and other people will say, well, you are creditworthy. There is a plan to deal with these rather than, well, we have this obligation and we really don't know how we're going to deal with it.
Are there any further questions?
I just have one then, if no one's. I was going to try to give the members
a chance to say Peterson.
I think Senator Anderson had raised his hand there.
Oh, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pappas, in Article 7, miscellaneous provisions, it says the dues deduction is clarified as membership dues expanded to other payments. I don't know what those other payments are. And then it says the restriction against retirement annuity deductions for political purposes is eliminated. Is there something that's going wrong that we have to eliminate that provision?
Can you take the first question? Yeah.
Mr. Martin, were you going to cover the first question?
Members, Senator, the other payments are a variety of things, as testimony indicated. It's contributions to charitable organizations that the retirees do en masse rather than individually. There wasn't a great amount of specificity, but there was that general indication. by Mr. Side, who's the, with the AFSCME union. If there is someone from one of the labor organizations here, they might want to clarify what they have in mind. But that was the general nature of the testimony.
Mr. Thorson can talk about this.
Please state your name for the record.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Thorson with AFSCME Council 5. Director Martin's right. There's any number of organizations and deductions that employees enjoy during state service, whether it's United Way or, in this case, that and the ability to pay dues to continue in a retiree chapter of our union.
And Madam Chair, also along with that, it says that the retirement annuity deductions for political purposes is eliminated. Is there a purpose? I mean, is there something going wrong now that we have to eliminate that provision in law? Is there something that campaign finance is having trouble with that particular provision and statute that we now have to eliminate that?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, currently members of our union have the ability to have voluntary deductions into our PAC, and this would, if they were to be members of a retiree chapter, this would afford them the same opportunity they have as current employees.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Anderson,
Mr. Thorson, this looks like we're expanding this to the other payments, and so we can take into consideration, other than United Way, you could come up with, you name the particular area that you wanted to have money put into for purposes of political purposes, and then all of a sudden, well, that's for political purposes, but we're going to eliminate that, and so we're not going to say that anymore, and we'll just kind of hide that behind the sheet, so to speak. That's just, to me, it's working now in law. I don't see why we should have to eliminate that particular thing. If it's working for you now in your union, then let it stay there. But now because we're gonna redo these benefit plans or help them out, we're also then going to change the law to expand it, to me. And I don't agree with that.
Response, Mr. Thorson?
Well, again, it's as members of the retiree chapter, this change would allow the members of the retiree chapter to have deductions be spent the way they would choose, not unlike the current union members.
Thank you. Mr. Hall, Senator Hall, I'm sorry.
Did the retiree groups ask for that change?
Mr. Thorson, Senator Pappas.
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Hall, yes, the retiree chapter of AFSCME in the state has.
Madam Chair?
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And does the chapter vote on where they donate finances to, or do they vote on which political group they give money to?
Mr. Thorson.
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Hall, to the extent contributions would go there, it would go into, the union right now, and there are members of the retiree chapter involved in those decision-making processes.
So they don't vote.
Yeah, so they don't vote? Is that what you're saying?
Senator Hall.
They have representatives that serve on the organizing board. The retirees are represented.
Yep.
They don't take a separate vote, it sounds like.
And Madam Chair, how do they decide then where that money goes? To what groups?
Is it on the PAC?
Sure.
Mr. Thorson.
Madam Chair, Representative Hall, I guess the same way that current employed members would as well. I mean, the retirees send representatives to our committees.
Madam Chair, and then
Senator
the
Hall.
Representatives, they vote on where that goes to, whether it goes to one party, another, one political group or another?
Mr. Thorson.
Do they vote on that then?
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, yes. I mean, there's a decision-making process that involves voting of the committee.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Thorson, I've had union members say that they don't get a chance to vote on where their money goes to for political purposes. And so it's been decided by the leadership of the union, whether it's AFSCME or PERA, whoever it is that's doing that. So to me, it sounds, well, what you're telling me, that you told Senator Hall that they do get to vote on it, but I've had people out in my area that say they don't get to vote on it. So I don't know which one it is.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, I think what Mr. Thorson said is that no, not every individual member gets to vote. They vote for their representative that serves on that committee, and then that committee would decide where contributions would go or who would be endorsed or whatever the process is.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I do have an amendment to change this, so whenever amendments are ready to be brought forward, I'll be glad to do that.
I was going to move the bill, so we better do amendments.
Madam Chair, I don't think the amendment was submitted to the committee. I have it in my packet here.
Well, Senator Anderson, were you going to offer it and pass
it out? I can bring
it
forward. And, Madam Chair, I'd like to have a roll call on this amendment, please.
Roll call has been requested. Senator Anderson, would you like to start explaining your amendment while we're waiting to see it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to explain that basically it reinstates the stricken language as it states on. But not everybody's got the language yet, I guess.
I think they do.
It doesn't seem like it's a problem.
Yep.
Shall reimburse.
So, Madam Chair, it does basically reinstate the stricken language on page 51, lines 21 and 22, and on page 52, line 3, reinstates that language, and then reinstates language on line 50. Page 52, line 4, and then inserts membership dues or other payments after the word amounts. So that's basically putting back the language that we already had in statute. And like I said, I'd like to have a roll call on that.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Anderson. Is there any more discussion on the amendment? Does everyone understand it?
Madam Chair, I would oppose the amendment. I don't think this is done anywhere else in law, and the Pension Commission did approve it, and we had discussion. We had quite a bit of discussion about it and kind of approved it on a bipartisan basis. So there wasn't even any controversy in the Pension Commission about it. So I don't see what the problem is.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, a roll call has been requested.
Pappas?
No.
Eaton?
No.
Hall?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
No.
Hayden?
No.
Housley?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Torres Ray? Wicklund?
No.
With 5 yeses and 7 noes, the amendment is defeated. Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, I would offer the A11 amendment, and I got it for staff here if they'd like to pass it out. And this is simple in what it does. Members, if you want to look at your at the delete all amendment, page 23, it simply deletes Article 4. And maybe Mr. Martin could describe a little bit what it does, but essentially this addresses one of the concerns that I share with Senator Peterson, which is a situation where we've got these funds that are in trouble financially and we're actually adding liabilities by increasing the payout for some. So maybe Mr. Martin could explain in a little more detail exactly what this would change.
Mr. Martin.
Madam Chair, I believe Senator Pappas would like TRA to explain what its provision is doing. The amendment that you have before you would delete that article, so I think it's fair to have the proponent of that change lay out what the change is.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Laurie Hacking, Teachers Retirement Association Director. Article 4 is an attempt to restructure TRA's early retirement reduction factors or penalties. As a result of a recent experience study that was done, there was a change in the actuarial methodology used to calculate these reduction factors, these penalties. And they produced very significant reductions in early retirement penalties. Early retirement benefits, reductions in those benefits. So our board has studied this issue, and what is in Article 4 is a recommendation on their part to allow some of these early retirement penalties to go into effect, particularly for teachers who are younger than age 62. And for those who are older than age 62, the penalties are actually lessened. And so these penalties are restructured to try to encourage later retirement on the part of teachers than what would occur under the current construct. So that's the idea behind it. It's a restructuring. And by virtue of the way it's designed, it is designed to be cost neutral, meaning it does not add any cost to our current benefit structure. It does, in a sense, forego some potential savings had we allowed these penalties to go in full force. But it instead is restructuring them to encourage later retirement and is designed to be cost neutral relative to the current plan.
Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering if Senator Thompson could go through kind of what the benefit to the fund will be if we adopt the amendment as you see it, Senator.
Senator Thompson.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Peterson, thank you. And I guess that I actually did this stuff is fairly technical, and I thought Mr. Martin could maybe help us with exactly how the dollars work out. But my understanding, Mr. Martin, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that essentially there's a group of retirees that under this particular section are actually getting the way it was stated, I think is correct, rather than some reductions kicking in that would exist for early retirement, these reductions are now taken out by this section. So my amendment would remove this section and therefore put less pressure on the fund by having benefit payouts to be less for a certain group of retirees. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Martin.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, that the reductions, if the law were allowed to operate without any modification to the reductions, would require greater reductions than current and greater reductions in most cases than is provided in the bill. Because people change behavior when you change in incentives, there's some difficulty in getting a clean picture of what the actuarial impact is. There's a certain amount, there's a range that the TRA actuary provides the TRA board. Depending upon how much this causes teachers to delay retirement as a consequence, how much of an actual impact this would actually have. So it's somewhere in the neighborhood of, best I can tell, about 0.4% of pay to about 0.8% of pay. Ms. Hacking can correct me, but that's what I understood from reading the actuarial work that I was given a copy of and hearing the testimony of Ms. Hacking.
Ms. Hacking.
Madam Chair, yes, our actuary did study this, and it is a range, as Mr. Martin described. The numbers are a bit different. Actually, the range is the potential for a savings to our system, a 0.3% of payroll, in other words, a cost reduction, to potentially a very slight cost of 0.1% of pay. Most likely, those are the two ranges. Most likely, the actuary said it'll be somewhere in the middle, but it is difficult to predict predict exactly what retirement patterns will be until we see these in effect. So most likely there would be a potential savings to the system when it all netted out.
Thank you. Any further?
I request a roll call, Madam Chair.
A roll call has been requested and granted. Is there further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, members, we did think about this quite a bit in the Pension Commission. The problem really is that teachers plan sometimes quite far ahead what their retirement plans are, and the plans counsel them about what their likely benefit is going to be. And when then these things come up, I've already had several teachers in my office actually complaining to me, even about the hacking plan. I mean, not the hacking plan, but the TRA plan, which is softened from if we let the new factors go fully into effect, it would be more draconian for the teachers. So they spend all this time. And we don't want teachers to take too early retirement. That's very costly for the plan. But on the other hand, it's very difficult to be a teacher for 30 years, and sometimes it's good to get them out of the classroom as well if they're not, able to perform as a teacher in their 60s, because it's a very, difficult, stressful job. So what Ms. Hacking has designed is if they make it until those last couple years, then their plan isn't reduced as their pension isn't reduced as much. But if they do take early retirement, we're not penalizing them quite as much, but they are still being penalized. So it is kind of a compromise proposal, keeping in mind the many, many teachers that are going to be upset and calling your offices because what TRA promised them is now not going to be the case. We're trying to avoid all that problem, to say, yes, there is going to be, though, some sacrifice. You're not going to be getting quite the amount that you plan on. It may be, several hundred dollars a month less than what you were counting on, which if you're living on quite a tight budget after retirement, that's going to be significant for you. So I understand where Senator Thompson is coming from. I think this is a pretty difficult decision, but I ended up on the side of supporting TRA in this modification, so I would oppose the 11A amendment.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
Senator Pappas, I just want to make this clear because this is a little bit newer to me. We guarantee nothing when we do a pension, right? We don't guarantee to the teachers. We project the investments we put the money into, that somewhere within this range we hope that money will be there at retirement? Or do we actually guarantee
Hacking.
This is what you will get?
Ms. Hacking.
Madam Chair and Senator, I would say that it is the closer a person is to retirement, I think there is a greater degree of reliability on what that benefit amount is. So I wouldn't use words like guarantee and that sort of thing. But when someone is close to retirement and they've been told and to expect a certain benefit level, have made their plans and decisions in accordance with those projections, then it is something that they are relying on, and most likely the courts would tend to protect that reliance. But until it's actually tested, That's a hard thing to answer in a black and white manner.
Mr. Martin would like to comment as well.
Mr. Martin.
Senator, I think what may help, yes, Madam Chair, what we're promising is a certain percentage of someone's high five average salary. So for each year of service credit, there's a certain percentage of your ultimate high five, which tends to be your last five years. That's being promised, and that's the full benefit that's payable at the normal retirement age, which is 65 or 66. Where the variability that Ms. Hacking is talking about comes in is when individuals want to retire early, and in some cases they're considering this several years before they retire. We are projecting what their high five is likely to be, and we're also projecting what the reduction factors are likely to be. The reduction factors have to change whenever there's a mortality table change or when there's an interest rate change. So that's the variability that's added into this. It's not really the investment markets. It's not projecting how the assets are going to do, but it's trying to gauge where that individual is going to be when they actually terminate employment, then establish a high five, and then a certain set of factors do apply to them.
Madam Chair, thank you for the information. That's a great benefit. I never realized what teachers really get. Do legislators get the same thing?
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, legislators before 1997 are in a defined benefit plan. There are roughly two dozen legislators who are still in the legislature that are covered by that plan. The balance of the legislature are in a defined contribution plan, and the pot of gold that's amassed with member and employer contributions and investment earnings will generate what pension you'll ultimately receive. There, very much the investment markets will be a function of, or will be a factor in determining what your ultimate pension is.
Okay. Any further discussion? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have amendment before us? I
apologize. We're on 11A.
I'll pass for now.
Okay. Senator Thompson moves the 11A amendment and has requested a roll call.
Pappas?
No.
Eaton?
No.
Hall?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
No.
Hayden?
No.
Housley?
Yes.
Johnson? Peterson?
Yes.
Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Torres Ray? Wicklund?
No.
With five yeses and seven noes, the amendment is defeated.
Then, Madam Chair, if there are no further amendments, I would move that Senate File 1191 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. Senator Peterson had a comment. I forgot.
It was, just a couple more questions just to get my head fully wrapped around this here. So getting back to the conversation we were having prior to the amendments, Senator Pappas, you had laid out kind of the principles as to why we're doing what we're doing with the Duluth and St. Paul teacher funds. And that was to kind of bring some equity and an equitable situation between those members of TRA and these other funds. And I'm just trying to figure out what can we do, and I'm sure you've thought through all of these things. But for example, I'll point out an example. Getting rid of kind of that blink-on provision in the Duluth fund in case of a situation where you're less than 80% funded. I'm referring to the 1% COLA increase, regardless of the fund deficiency. You understand what I'm talking about?
We are.
Senator Pappas?
I'm not sure what you mean, Senator Peterson, by blink on. We are setting the COLA at 1% for Duluth.
Yeah, they have the conditional requirement that if the fund is at a certain below 80%, that you do not get a COLA.
That's right. Current law. So we're changing current law.
Right, I understand that. So even if I'm accepting all the premises for your argument here, why do we then go on top of it to get rid of some of those things, even in a situation where the fund is deficient? So we can talk, we can have, let's say I accepted your equity premise and agreed that the state should do this because this is the right thing to do. Why would we then go another step and then add in COLA in a situation? It seems to me like some of those contingency items are a good fail-safe, and maybe they don't come anywhere close to rectifying the fund shortage, but they help. So what's the reason as to why we don't have those sorts of things with the Duluth and St. Paul funds? And I understand that this one is talking about Duluth. Why did we go the extra step to get rid of that as well?
Madam Chair and Senator Peterson, Duluth did have a zero COLA for, I believe, 3 years. We're looking at kind of a you can come join me if you want, Mr. Johnson. We're looking at a situation where we're maybe in a potential transition in pension philosophy, but our current pension principles state that were developed over many years state that it's really important to maintain the kind of the integrity of the retiree's retirement fund, so the purchasing power, if you will. So I don't know what – I can't remember off the top of my head what the CPI is in terms of inflation, but I think it's greater than 1%. And certainly we had some inflation over the last 3 years when the COLA was frozen for the Duluth retirees. So there is a kind of a tension over this in terms of past practice in the Pension Commission of being very conscious that the retirees' retirement will maintain its integrity and not erode over time, because they've kind of counted on that and are expecting that. So the conflict with that, of course, is the problem with the full funding. So Duluth did come in and ask for a 2% COLA, which was what TRA has. And I told them that because of the state aid they're requesting, I would be more comfortable if we dropped the COLA to 1%. Duluth, St. Paul, I believe, is at 1%. TRA is at 2%, but may have to revisit that next year. And I'm not sure if TRA was below 2% for a while. I can't see Ms. Hacking. She's hiding behind the pillar. You have been at
zero for two.
You were at zero for 2 years. Yeah, TRA was at zero for 2 years. So, you know, the COLA is, as we try to stabilize the fund, the COLA definitely is in play, and we're keeping an eye on that and watching it very closely.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pappas. And I, you know, you're the chair of the committee, so I'm sure you don't bring the bill to the committee unless you can move the bill out of the committee. And so I'm not going to try to go ahead and change anything in the bill here today, but it seems like you could kind of go three different routes. You could do nothing and, you know, risk the, you know, death spiral. You could bring it to a certain level of solvency, if you will, through aid. And then you could go another step, and you could actually do all those things and increase benefits.
And do the merger.
That maybe is the fourth step.
Oh,
but
okay.
What we're doing here is we're not just holding harmless or doing aid. We're doing aid and benefit increases.
And contribution increases.
And some contribution increases. And what is the...
In every
just
case,
for everyone,
we're doing contribution increases.
And
I know, that's why
I'm not talking about a lot of the other funds. I think there's actually a... I think a lot of the funds actually have great austerity plans, if you want to call them that. What, just so everyone can feel more comfortable maybe about where you arrived, what restraint was shown? So, in other words, we're giving increased benefits despite a low funding percentage. What restraint was shown? What did we not do, I guess, that we could have done? And I know we're the legislature. We can do whatever we want, but in a realistic sense.
Senator Pappas.
Well, Madam Chair, we certainly could have done zero COLAs in all cases. But that's maybe putting, that could be argued to be putting too much of a burden on the retirees. We could have not done the multiplier to equalize Duluth and St. Paul with TRA, which would have helped those two funds. In Ms. Hacking's case with TRA, we could have gone with the new mortality tables and the new factors, which was what Senator Thompson was proposing. We certainly could jack up contributions from employers' employees even higher, you know, from we're going to 7.5% in kind of a phase in both cases, with St. Paul paying more. I suppose we could reduce benefits, you know. But all those things that we do, we have to keep in mind unintended consequences. Do we create an uneven playing field between Duluth and teachers in Duluth and St. Paul and the rest of the world? Do we have retirees who sue us because they were promised their retirement with COLAs and they're not getting it? Can we reduce benefits and increase contributions? Is that fair to do, to ask people this generation to pay more and get less than the previous generation? We already have quite a bit of resentment out there because previous generations, when the stock market was doing well, got better benefits. They got the rule of 90. They got, you know, substantial COLAs that we're not giving out now in, you know, in people who have already retired, you know, maybe 10 years ago. So it's kind of a very difficult balancing act, and I would love to have you join the Pension Commission and be in on these discussions because they're not easy decisions to make. I think Mr. Johnson might want to address the Duluth thing.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dave Johnson, and I'm an attorney that represents the Duluth Teachers Retirement Fund Association. And just a little bit on the COLA. In 2010, Duluth came in, and as part of their stabilization funding package, had proposed a 0% COLA tied to an 80% funding ratio. That was, at the time, criticized by Pension Commission staff as being draconian compared to what other funds were proposing. And ultimately what ended up happening is that Duluth is, out of the 185,000 retirees in the state of Minnesota, Duluth, the 1,400 members at Duluth are receiving, the only ones that aren't receiving a COLA this year and won't be receiving one into the foreseeable future. The other thing I think might be helpful is that traditionally Duluth has received very little state assistance. This is new to us. I can tell you that in the last 20 years, the state has appropriated almost $600 million in supplemental appropriation aid to state pension funds that have needed help, and Duluth has asked for $4.7 million of it, less than 1%. We're here because of our demographic issue and some stock market problems. And we will be a fund that will be looking very closely at the consolidation issue over the interim because we understand we have a long-term problem. But our COLA is much less than most other funds that have asked for a lot more. Our COLA is non-existent for the last 3 years and without some help and some kind of an equity adjustment to be like all the other employees receiving a COLA, we feel it would be perpetuating that inequality. So that's the rationale behind it. We did, as Senator Pappas mentioned, come in with a higher COLA, but we understood the sensitivities and reduced it down to exactly what St. Paul's getting. And that was the rationale.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, the question is on the motion of Senator Pappas that Senate File 1191 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Finance Committee.
I don't know if a roll call has been requested or not, but I'd request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested and granted.
Pappas?
Yes.
Eaton?
No. Yes.
Hall?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Dahl?
Yes.
Hayden?
Yes.
Housley?
No.
Johnson?
Yes.
Peterson?
Is yes, no an option?
You can write maybe on
yes.
There?
No.
Scalzi?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Torres Ray? Wickland?
Yes.
Having seven yeses and five noes, the bill passes and is recommended to pass.
Thank you.
It goes to finance. Is there any further business? Seeing none, the committee is adjourned.